We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Dwight D. Gray.
You're ready now, Dr. Cash.
Okay. All right. Good evening. Welcome, everyone. My name is Kreiner Cash, superintendent of the Buffalo Public Schools. And on behalf of the Board of Education and the entire Buffalo Public Schools family, I want to welcome you to this evening's broadcast, live streaming from City Hall. This meeting is intended to be many public meetings where the entire public has a chance to provide ideas, comments, suggestions, questions. Just give us feedback. Let's get involved in making this reopening plan something very special for our children and for our families. We know about the fears related and concerns related to COVID-19, but what we're really talking about is all of education, how we may use this as an opportunity to reimagine education altogether, maybe not ever going back to how it was pre-COVID. So I want to start to unleash the genius that I know we have here and in our community. Genius of our children, genius of our teachers, genius of our parents. Everyone, if you start thinking about how we can do our work better together, we'll go further than we ever have. All right. So what I want to do in a short amount of time, because I want to hear mainly from you, is I want to give you a few points or main points about what this plan is right now, where it is right now. And what we had to do, colleagues, we had to develop a plan for reopening our schools that met 18 pages of state assurance. The New York State Education Department told us very clear terms. No uncertain terms, they were very clear that we had to have assurances in about a dozen major aspects of our operation as a school district. And we had to say yes or no. And we had to explain and describe what it was we were going to do with our teaching and learning in about a dozen areas, for example. So with school reopening models, what kind of models were we going to offer the community? And you can see in this plan at this point, there are three major reopening models. Open in full, open in person full, open remote only, and some combination of the two, some what we call hybrid of the two. There's school schedule issues. There's attendance and chronic absenteeism issues that had to be addressed. Social emotional learning, which now will become side by side as a key part of our educational plan going forward now, given that all of our children and families have been through over the last 6 months, and so forth and so on. You'll see that in the table of contents in this plan. And each one of those sections were a requirement by the state for us to respond to their guidance on what we needed to do, what we absolutely had to have in place before we could reopen schools. And so we've done that. We had participation among a number of our major stakeholders. That's listed right in here in the first several pages of who we worked with and who we consulted as we developed this plan. As a professional educator of over 42 years, I've been looking across the globe, across the world, across the country at reopening plans to see what fit and might help us here in the context of our student population, our teacher population here in Buffalo. And we've taken elements and adapted some of those that we thought were really important to include to help our students grow and learn and help our teachers get the training and support they needed when they come back into an environment that we've never faced before. So there's those two major parts of this plan that we call a working draft that are in here. And the first 50 pages or so address what we had to turn in and respond to the state on. And there was no wiggle room around that. And we wanted as much ideas as we could from those who participated on the various committees for that part of the plan. And then we began to start to say, okay, this is an opportunity, colleagues, that while we address the safety concerns, which always will be foremost, they're always the first thing that we're all concerned about. But we also can begin to reimagine and rethink some of the operations and aspects of teaching and learning that we have done, we're doing prior to the COVID shutdown. Now, what can we do different? Let's think about it. We've had time to be thinking about this. And it's been that part has been really exciting for me as a professional to see how staff dug into that opportunity, to see how students have begun to respond and talk about what helps and what hinders their learning and what they would like to see and what would really motivate and excite them if we had more of this in our instructional program, in our educational programming. And then teachers are brilliant when it comes to what works best for children. And we want to hear from teachers who were represented in this part of the plan. And now we're asking to continue to be at the table with us and give us your suggestions and thoughts. A whole new plan, if you would like, on what would work best given the environment that we are in at this time. Principals, I've already given the green light. Start working in your schools, pull groups of your top staff together, and start thinking about what reopening would look like in your school, from every operational detail to, again, schedules, teaching and learning, project-based learning, older kids teaching younger kids, all kinds of research-based things that we could do that would raise and lift student voice, help us keep right in the center of our thinking and our work, all of these critical social justice issues that are going on around our country and around the globe at this time, keeping those prime in our work and giving students a chance to learn ever more and deeper about that. So that all has been going on, I think, very effectively. And I wanted to commend all of the people who have worked so hard. And you'll see it in the superintendent's message from parents to staff, to teachers, to everyone who were on this committee to help us get to where we are now. There's just been tremendous amount of work. I want to commend all the parents during the spring who worked so hard to keep in concert with us as we tried for the first time ever to provide remote learning at home. And the shifts, the fast shifts we had to make to be able to try to do that. We've learned a lot since the spring, and then even over the summer, a lot of summer programming that has been going on. And you'll see that reflected daily as we continue to grow this plan. You'll see those lessons learned being adapted into our emergent plan. So I like that feature. I like the lessons learned feature. I like that we went far beyond even what the state required in this plan. When we talked about CTE, we talked about the culturally and linguistically responsive work that is going on in our district, so ably led by so many staff working in tandem there to keep that voice of students at the forefront of our work. And then, of course, safety and operations. Colleagues, make no mistake about it. The custodial team, the building engineer, the child nutrition team, the security teams, they have all been working overtime every day, all day, sometimes 7 days a week, trying to make sure that we continue to provide essential services to our children and families. We've almost served 2.9 million meals to children and families since this shutdown began in March 18th. And parent volunteers helping us in that have been phenomenal. And so that kind of esprit de corps, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? What's my role in all of this work to educate our children effectively? What can I do? That's the spirit that we must have to reopen successfully. So it's an exciting time while it's also a worrying time. But if we worry only, we won't take advantage of the many opportunities that are before us. So working together, let's figure out how we can improve education, particularly public education, for the families that we serve better than we ever have before. And that's what really this is about more than anything. So let's begin that conversation. You will see in the appendices of this plan where I've offered a proposal about reopening that starts to get at some of these challenges that we know we must tackle before we can even begin to think about having a full, safe reopening. But that's what I want to see. We want to have maybe a phased reopening. If you don't like that plan, give us feedback about it. Give us feedback about it and tell us what parts you don't like, what you like, or a whole different plan if you have a whole different idea about it. You'll see there's some costs that go with a lot of this. Don't forget, at the end of the day, we're a public education system that relies, 83-85% of our funding comes from the state. So resources, if they're tight, we're at the state level, they're going to be tight with us as well. It trickles down that way. So we'll do, and we're trying to assure you and comfort you, get you at a comfort level within the resources that we have, within the resources that we have. And that's where the work begins in earnest. So that's all I wanted to say at the top. We have had many, 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 many conversations with a lot of people globally, nationally. All the major organizations have been partnering with us, and we still have a long way to go. But together, I'm absolutely confident, particularly with Buffalo's spirit of generosity and thoughtfulness, that we'll do what the children of our great district needs. So this is not the district's plan that we're talking about. This is our plan. This is our plan. It's your plan. It's your plan. Make it your plan by giving us your feedback, and we'll make sure that it shows up in it. All right, that's how I wanted to open. If I made any omissions or forgot anything major, then that's on me. That is my apology. I didn't want to spend the whole time talking. I want to spend the time responding to you. So Dr. Reynolds, my whole team is here, as you know. They're on call to respond if you ask a question that I can't answer or respond to. But let's get started with that portion of the meeting.
Dr. Cash, we have a question. Can parents choose the option of just distance learning for their child?
Hello, Elena? Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now.
Okay. The question was, can a parent choose remote learning only for her child?
Exclusively, yes.
Exclusively? That is an option that we are posing to our parents at this time. So yes, it is one of three broad options for our parents to consider at this time. Short answer is yes. And we will be working out in the coming days and weeks what exactly you need as a parent for your child and your family from the district in order for you to have a successful year of remote learning or the first part of the year, first 3-4 months in that option. Because this is a fluid scenario, science will guide it, and we will be making decisions as we go throughout the year, depending on the current status of the COVID-19 virus. Short answer is yes.
We have another question. Will parents of special education children have the same choices as parents who don't? Will parents with children in special education have the same choices as parents with general education students?
Yes, yes. It is imperative that we meet all of the needs of the parents with special education. And depending on the parents' wishes there, we intend to offer a full menu of services in school if a parent chooses to have an in-school option. We would try to plan for that scenario as well. We don't anticipate that every parent will choose to have their child come back in person. If they do, that would be a situation that would not allow me to say that we could do it safely. But we think that as we're out to survey now with our parents, that a percentage will choose in person, a percentage will choose remote learning only, and a percentage working with our teachers and principals will figure out what kinds of hybrid approach will work best. Synchronous, asynchronous learning approaches will work best. We don't have a full answer on that yet. We just think that for those who want their child to be in school some of the time and then other of the time not, that we'll try to work on a model that meets their needs as well.
We have several questions asking when a decision might be made regarding the model that will be adopted for September. When do you anticipate that?
Well, again, I don't see it right now as being a single model option. I see it as being a multiple model option. And that's why these meetings are so important, so that we can hear from parents, we can get staff together working and giving us feedback and figuring this out. Overall, we have an overall approach, but then it's going to be idiosyncratic to each school. Each school will have sort of a reopening set of options for that school, because that population of children and young people will be different. High school need will be different than a pre-K to 8. Or even a pre-K to 2, which we have some of those kinds of schools. So it's going to be multiple approaches, not just one.
One more question about returning to school is what you think the class sizes would be like?
That's a good question. It's an important one. We think that when we get the information that's out now, by August 21st, of who is going to decide, you know, who decides which model they would like to choose, because at some point a week or two before school, I'm thinking more like 2 weeks before school, we're going to, after we review the data that comes in on these three basic approaches, we're going to be able to say, okay, we've gotten this percentage back. Now we need you to start making a commitment, start to make a commitment about what you want to start the school year as. And that commitment, frankly, well, again, while it's fluid, I think it ought to be for at least the first half of the year. And so that way, then we can plan and know more precisely what our class sizes are going to look like for in-person instruction. Does that make sense?
It does. Another
until we know who's choosing that model, we won't know what the class sizes will look like, is what I'm saying.
Right. One more topic that is theming here is it's cleanliness, it's transportation, and it's bathrooms. It's about the cleaning of bathrooms, classrooms, buses. How will that be worked out?
That is certainly in the area of operations. That's the very highest and most important priority, starting with facilities. Facilities, very proud and pleased with what the staff has been doing and what they plan to do with cleaning of facilities. They've been working all summer on making sure they have the supplies, the hospital grade cleaning and sanitation supplies that they've needed to do. We've reconfigured a lot of the school workspaces, office spaces, and we're starting to look at classrooms. Again, this is why individual principals working with their teaching and instructional staff and support staff can start taking a look at their buildings and saying, hey, this is what we need. This is where we would like to see more of this, less of that, and start to help us with the continuing of this. But it is priority one, and we're sure that these buildings will be cleaned daily and that areas that have frequent touch will be cleaned multiple times during the day, multiple times. And that's what we're working out, all of those specific protocols. And the facilities folks are doing a terrific job, at least at this point. And what we need to hear, of course, is from the staff that will be impacted by what this looks like in their school buildings. I know we've used downtown City Hall and our non-school sites as an example of how we reopen those facilities. And again, I'm here at the office and I'm impressed with how you come into the building, how you get your temperature checked, where you have to stand, how you have to walk, the social distancing, the masks that are required anytime that you are out and around other people. And I'm very pleased with how we've done this at City Hall and other sites. We can use that as a model for our schools and continue to improve it even further, because that's where children and staff will be. In terms of buses and transportation, we've been in close contact with NFTA and First Student, and they assure us that the drivers and the buses are being retrofitted. People are being trained, the drivers, to safely and socially distance the children. Children will be required to take, you know, to have masks on all the time on the buses. Drivers will have masks. And what we have to work out based on how many choose to come to school full time, because that's when transportation kicks in. We are looking to make as efficient as we can the routes. Rerouting may need to happen where we pick up kids, for example, in zip codes, and then bring them to school from particular zip codes, which will make it a more efficient way to pick up and drop off children and cut down on the costs associated with transportation at this time. So those are ideas that came from principals, that came from staff and the bus team over in our transportation center. So we look forward to those great ideas continuing to come in and help us with this work. At this time, I think I'd grade it satisfactory and working toward excellent. Until we pressure test it some more with, as I said, in real time with real staff, we won't know fully how effective these plans are, but that's what we're expecting to do over these next coming days.
Here's a question about the district's information gathering. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a two-part. Are students being engaged to provide feedback? Mm-hmm. And how can parents be surveyed to find out what they really want?
How can parents be?
Surveyed, yes.
Okay, that's a two-part question.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear from Dr. Cassandra Wright and Dr. Darren Brown a little bit at this time, particularly around the students, because the students have been just fabulous from what I'm hearing. So Dr. Sandy Wright, if you could talk a little bit, and then Darren, if you would pick up as well.
Absolutely. This is Dr. Cassandra Wright. I just want to respond to the fact that we have been having meetings with select student groups. Our first meeting was held on last Monday. We talked with about 40 different high schoolers from various mentoring groups in the surrounding area. The questions and the comments that the young people had were quite sophisticated. They've been immersed into this world of COVID plus education and have a lot of questions and concerns. After having that meeting, several others who happened to be on the line invited us to have conversations with another group. This group was twice that size, so we had approximately 75 high schools throughout the city. Again, very sophisticated conversations and comments and concerns about what will their educational life look like going back to school. What will the cleaning schedule look like? What will the recommendations for wearing a mask or not wearing a mask look like? What will online education look like? Who's going to be held accountable to ensure that they get the best education possible, regardless of the fact that we are in a pandemic? So there are many adults who are on those calls, the cabinet members, and we have another meeting again tomorrow, and board members are being invited. The kids have a lot to say about what's happening concerning their education. A lot of adults are voicing their concerns, and Dr. Brown and I wanted to make sure that we captured the voice of the students because the education is for them. Dr. Brown, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, you're exactly right, Dr. Wright. So the students, they were very, very forthcoming with the information they wanted to share with us, and we appreciated that, and we want to continue to have those student forums going forward. So as the plan changes, we get their feedback immediately, as well as parent feedback. So one of the questions was about getting parent feedback and parents completing the survey. If you go to our website, www.buffaloschools.org, there is a box under important announcements, and it says reopening 2020-2021 school year. If you click on that, you will find the reopening plan. You scroll down a little bit. There is a survey we are asking parents to complete. That survey, we are also asking for information on what parents would choose in order to send their kids back to school. The hybrid model, the fully remote model or the fully in-person model. So that survey is on the website. And if you don't have the access, you can access on your phone by going to buffaloschools.org/reopen. Again, buffaloschools.org/reopen, and you will find the survey, and you'll be able to complete it there and get us the information. Thank you very much.
Here's another question that is falls under health and safety, but will children's temperatures be taken on arrival to school? And how will the schools enforce the wearing of face masks?
I think that's a great question. Tanja, is that your, I think that's your bailiwick. I would just add before Tanja responds, I think that they ought to actually have the temperatures taken before they come into school, before they get on the bus. And one of the things I want parents to help us with is what would you need in order to take the temperature of your child when she leaves home? I think that's really where an optimal scenario it needs to start. And then certainly we'll be prepared to do it at school as well. I just don't want to take up 2 or 3 hours at the start of each day taking temperatures. So this is something that we want to talk more about. But Tanja, do you have a process there that you want to just identify?
So you outlined pretty much exactly what it is that we said in the plan we would do. We would like to have an assurance with our parents to take the temperatures in the morning before the children even board the bus. But we will have mechanisms in the school. All of our schools have school nurses that are licensed practitioners, and they will be prepared to take temperature readings in the school every single day.
Good. Thank you for that. Tell them that.
I have another question here that Tanja might weigh in on also. Will all siblings have to quarantine if one of the children has been exposed to the virus? The children.
Great question. I think Tanja can talk to it. Darren, coming out of the meeting today with the health commissioner, whether they're positive or negative, I think that's how that triggered. You could answer that succinctly as well.
Absolutely, Dr. Cash. So coming out of the meeting with Gail Burstein today, there is a flow chart that is available. So if there is a student that does test positive for COVID, their family members who have been in close contact with them will also have to quarantine. What the school district will then be responsible for is to supply the Erie County Department of Health with information of students and staff members that have been within 6 feet of the student or staff member for 10 minutes or more. We provide that to the Erie County Department of Health, and then they begin the contact tracing, and then they are able to enforce the quarantine measures for individuals who have been in contact with someone who has tested positive.
Excellent. I think that covers that one. Elena, back to you.
How will occupational therapy and physical therapy be provided for children in the virtual model?
Very good. And we began some of that. We talked a number of quite a long time over the summer about this particular item. And I believe you began to do that pretty well for some of the students that we serve. Either you or Kim should answer that question.
We did provide related services virtually while we were closed. We did over 20,000 related services deliveries virtually. It went very well. We are looking at the models for the fall. Whether we could do some in person or not is yet to be decided, but we have continued over the summer delivering OT and PT virtually to any of our ESY students, extended school year students, and are being very successful with that. But we are definitely looking at other models for the fall depending on what service model we have.
And Kim, Is it not so, Ann and Kim, that we are considering bringing some populations of special need children, depending on their fragility, depending on the nature of their IEPs? Those would be some of the first populations of students, ELL students who have struggled with their lessons and their English language learning during the shutdown. Those might be some of the populations that we try, if parents agree, to bring back earlier than other populations.
Yes, we're especially looking at our 611 and our 811 population, which are some of our media students. We're definitely considering that for those populations, as well as possibly others.
Right. Ellen, back to you.
Here's a question. Who is responsible for teaching students during the virtual learning?
Somebody needs to Oliver.
Yes, I'm here.
The noise was coming from just muted.
Dr. Cash is muted now. We need to unmute Dr. Cash so we can hear what he's saying. Please, Oliver.
Yeah, I'm not controlling the microphone.
Dr. Cash, you're unmuted.
Unmuted? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. So ask the question again, Elena.
Who is chiefly responsible for teaching the students during virtual learning?
Who?
Yes.
The teacher.
I would think teachers. what is your response, Ann, please?
Yes, so teachers would definitely be the ones responsible for providing synchronous and asynchronous instruction to our students when we are virtual.
That's the short answer.
There is another question about due to the busing situation. Are you considering neighborhood or community schools to avoid overcrowding on buses?
Not sure I understand the question.
I believe the asker is asking if children can go to the school closest to their home that they can walk to.
Now I got it. Excellent. That would be great. Again, depending on the number, let's say we only have 25% of the parents who choose to come back in person during the first semester because of whatever they feel or understand about this virus that, you know, where it is in this country, where it is locally for that matter. That then we can open up. I consider all of these schools, all 60 of them, as open educational centers. And we can repurpose them fairly quickly once we get that most important data of what parents are gonna decide to do. And as we continue to grow these plans, build these plans, get everybody's input and feedback and support, then we can say maybe you can go to your local school, to the school nearest to you, because there's only this many of you and we know how many from each zip code and where you are and so forth. If you choose that, if you want to do that. So I like that thought. I like the thought. And I would say yes at this time to that, but that would be a detail we would have to work through. And principals have already come up with some great ideas like that. And I'm sure they would welcome you in our community schools for all of those that reside in that zip code. Elena, back to you.
There are many questions still coming in and have been since the beginning of this live event.
That's
about
good.
about the start of school. People are repeatedly asking when it will start. So perhaps I'm going over what the working plan is, what the iteration of that will be.
So Darren, you can support me on this. At this time, colleagues, my understanding is that school officially starts on September 8th of the coming year. That's according to the school calendar. And we have planned that, you know, months before. And that accounts for a 180-day year with all of its pieces that make up 180 days, as we're required to do by the state. What I wanted to do in the proposal, at least as a proposal, and I'm waiting to hear for more about it, was to take that first month or so for those who wanted, even if you wanted to start in person, take that first month or so to start remotely, because we've come a long way since spring when we did have many challenges, but we've learned a lot, and we have a much more robust plan now to support remote learning and equitably. I'm pleased with what we have on tap for you. That's another meeting and another time, but I think we look forward to telling you where, how far and where we are with that. But while we're teaching remotely to start, the first 2 weeks from September 8th to September 22nd or there around, you know, teachers would report and come in, those that could, and felt safe with them and far medically and physically and so forth, would come in and work closely with the administrative team to figure out what a day in the life looks like and really set that out, lay that out physically, all the safety requirements, all the protocols that would be needed, all of that would occur. Another big piece would be the training of teachers around our remote capability, whether they did it from home or whether they did it in class, in the classrooms that they set up at school. We'd like to see a lot of that kind of participation where teachers are teaching remotely from school. And then another important piece is, you know, the whole assessment of where kids are. Where are they? From a term point of social emotional learning, academic learning loss or gain in some cases we could imagine. And that kind of assessment, ongoing formative assessment of children on a host of dimensions of their growth would be taking place during that first 2 weeks. We also imagine parents setting up by appointment at their school, coming up and being escorted through the school by a teacher or by the principal or administrative team to say, this is where we are. Let me explain how our protocols would work. What do you think? So parents can see for themselves what the schools have done. Again, with the goal toward helping them feel more comfortable about what the school has done to plan for the return of their child or their children. So that all can happen. We can begin that planning now. And start to have those
But I still think it'd be, are you there? But I mean, I know you want to send her back, but I still think at least the first month, they don't even know how they're going to do the hybrid model, which is part like half, like partly in school and partly virtual learning.
Mute everyone, please.
So Elena, was that person trying to ask a question? We're ready.
I'm not sure who that person was.
Hello?
How will the district work with parents who don't have options because of their work schedules and are looking for places for the children to be during a school day?
That's exactly the kind of parent we want to hear from, because we really need to help that parent with with an in-school model. Darren, you want to say more about that, or any team member you want to call on for me that you think is prepared to respond to that?
Absolutely, because I know with the different models we have, even with our hybrid model, there will be days that students will be virtual learning from home. So I know child care is an issue, and Dr. Carestes worked on the child care issue during the springtime. So if he can comment on that, because I believe we plan on still having the same model for parents that need assistance.
Will, are you there?
Yes. With child care and making it making the information available to our partners at the Child Care Resource Network, we'll be doing it the same way we did with essential workers, where parents will fill out the survey information that's available on the homepage of our website. We will forward that to the Child Care Resource Network, and they will reach out to that parent immediately to offer them child care slots of their choice.
Elena, do you see any other dimensions? Thank you, Will, for that. Do you see any other dimensions to that question? I think that's an important question that we should answer.
I do not. I think that answered it. I have another question that is in Najin Nashir's wheelhouse. How will all of this information regarding reopening plans be communicated to families who do not speak English?
Yes, as we've always tried to do, have multiple languages translated and put our important messaging out in multiple languages. Nadia, do you have anything that you want to talk about there? There's some exciting platforms you've been working on or working with all through the shutdown period. Say more about how we are working to service and fully respond to the needs of our ELL families and students.
Yes, Dr. Cash. We're currently, right now, we have interpreters on Zoom calls waiting for families to join us so we can translate for them. Mm-hmm. We already had about six parents with our Spanish speaking family and a few more with our other languages. So we feel that it is very important that all parents are informed. So we take that responsibility very seriously. So every other upcoming meeting that you hold, Dr. Cash, our multilingual families will be supported with interpreters in-house and through International Institute and Journey End. So you mentioned something really exciting. What we've been hearing over the years, since I started in 2015, our parents are saying, you know, Buffalo Public School, you're great. You're great at sending information. You're great at translating information. But how do I communicate with my child's teacher? How do I share my concerns? Or I want to know what they're learning. And so right before COVID, I want to say maybe February, we launched Talking Points. Very popular. We've had over 15,000 text messages back and forth through parents and teachers. And finally, teachers can send a parent a message and it gets translated in the parent's home language. And then the parent can read the message in their home language, respond in their home language, and it gets translated in English for the classroom teacher and leader. So very exciting launches. That platform has been really successful. And I just want our families to know that we just sent out a all call and sharing with them that if they would like an interpreter for an upcoming meeting, or for a specialized meeting, like you have one for IT or SPED, special ed, they are to call the hotline that has been developed just for our multilingual learner families. So thank you. Thank you for asking.
And Dr. Nashir might as well take this opportunity to let our families who have multilingual education families and children know that this Wednesday, I believe, we have a 5 o'clock meeting scheduled for just you, just parents of multilingual education and ELL students. So 5 o'clock, Wednesday, August 12th, be sure to be here. And Dr. Reynolds, will you be hosting that meeting? Or will it be Dr. Nashir?
We'll be launching it on the Facebook Live platform. In fact, I believe there's 10 additional meetings that we'll be hosting by way of this platform.
Right.
In conjunction with the division leaders and department leaders.
Right. You know, I see that here. I've got it here. I just, while Nadia was talking, I wanted to let the ELL families know that this Wednesday at 5 p.m. will be a meeting for several hours just devoted to you.
Thank you, and your
needs and concerns.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Superintendent Cash, I think this will probably be the last question. But if a parent chooses one mode of returning their child to school for the 2021 school year, can they later change their mind and go to a different model?
I think the answer should be yes for that, for us to be responsive to our children, our families. But I don't want it to be zigzag early on. I would say that, and Darren, help me a little bit here. I would say that at least for I'd like to see the first half of the year, but I know this is fluid. First semester, first marking period. We need a period of time to plan. And if parents are changing every other day or every other week, then we can't plan bus schedules and academic schedules adequately to meet their needs. So if you could say a little more about that, Darren. I don't think the whole year would make sense at this point because some of this is fluid, but I think certainly the first half of the year for me and us to be able to do what we have to do makes sense. What do you think?
Thank you for that, Dr. Cash. We do want to ask parents to commit for the first semester because in our school buildings, when a parent commits to remote learning, we have to look at the class size because we have to social distance. We have to social distance on busing also. So if a parent commits to one way or the other, we ask that they keep that commitment for the entire semester because all of our planning inside the school building and the number of students we're allowed to have on each day of the cohort with the hybrid model is dependent on a set number. So to your point, we can't have parents changing their mind every week or every month. We need you to stick to a semester so that we can properly plan for our classrooms and our transportation.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. So colleagues, certainly I'll stay on if there are many, many, many more questions and continue to ask questions because I want you to have the opportunity to engage with us fully. And if you're sensing that, Eleanor, just let me know. But meanwhile, I will make these comments. There is a slide, Oliver, at the very end of what I had put together for you. We didn't get to actually show everything, but I talked about it. I talked it through. And at the end slide, Mr. Singletary, it says it gives two links. It gives two links there at the end. And I would like our viewing community to see these links. They're very important. The top link will take you into the working draft of this plan, and it is updated almost on a daily basis. So please continue to read and view and give us feedback to that plan. And then the second link is, in fact, how you can provide feedback to us. So those are fluid links. And websites, please take full advantage. We want to hear from you, your ideas, your comments, best practices that may be emerging. All of that is an opportunity. And there's just tremendous genius in all of you. And I want to cultivate that. I want to mine that genius, especially at this time. We all share the health concerns. Believe me, no one has more preconditioned issues than me. Look at me, I'm old, I got a weight problem, can't wait to eat. And those are things that people suffer from if they have those conditions. But, and diabetes is in my family. But beyond that, if we just focus on that, then we won't see this window that is open to really sort of begin to rethink, reimagine how we do our work day to day, whether it be meetings with principals. I think we should continue this kind of format instead of having to go out to Hurdle, West Hurdle every month with the travel time. And then, you know, you're gone almost half the day from your students and so forth. There's just a whole lot of things we can do differently if we take the best practices that are occurring all over the world right now. Let's glean those. Let's steal those. Let's adapt those to our working environment. And I look forward to engaging with you on these matters in the days and weeks ahead. So stay safe, be well, and God bless.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.